Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. How you doing, Bob?
Matt, I'm happy to see you. You look bright,
yeah,
and fresh,
yeah,
effervescent. Just back from Mexico. How was it?
Mexico was great. Also, I just did a hit with CP24, so then, you know, I just put goop in my hair. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of it. Mexico is great. I was literally just there for like three full days, like 3 nights, 3.5 days. And two of them were basically spent sitting on the beach drinking cheap Chardonnay. It was fantastic. The water was warm. The beach was great. Had a delightful time.
Okay, so a couple quick questions.
Yeah.
Did you have any good food?
Yes. Oh, my God. Octopus? Like, this one, went to this one very local restaurant, like, where the menu, there was no English version, which is fine, because you can always figure it out. Had this octopus that, if it was served in Toronto, would be $100. It was $15. It was awesome. And my other favorite thing, I had so much coconut shrimp. Oh, the coconut shrimp I ate. It was great.
You know what I think about the short vacation? Mm. And I've never really... I've gone on one in my life. I went to Bahamas for 4 days, just like you did to Mexico. This was years ago. Growing up, that always struck me as the height of luxury.
Mm-hmm.
You're not like, you know, okay, we're going to save all year. It's like, I'm just going to, you know what? I got to break in the action. I'm going to pop down to somewhere warm.
I'm going
to
jet over somewhere. Yeah.
One, to be so flexible and fluid,
right,
is pretty sexy.
Yep.
And then second of all, that you could be so busy, mm-hmm, that really you only have a couple of days, but you don't want to waste them.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm too busy at the office. You know, we got to get our quarterly reports in. This was more, Amy got this super cheap flight with Sunwing. So her and her twin and her twin's boyfriend and this other friend, Lindsay, they all went down, and I just met them a couple days later because I wanted to be here for the Grey Cup. So that's why I went to Mexico a little bit later than everyone else. I got there Tuesday early afternoon. I left Friday afternoon.
So it was only a short trip for you.
Yeah.
Because you were busy.
I was busy. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it.
Cheap airfare is the best. Mm-hmm. Airfare in Canada is very expensive.
Holy shit, is it ever.
You only have to go to Europe to realize there's all kinds of bargains and discounts, and you can take the train places. But here, it's an arm and a leg. To go to Ottawa.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's almost as if the lack of competition means prices are more expensive here. But you get so angry when you hear about, like, people, you know, oh, yeah, so where do you live? I live in England. What are you doing this weekend? Oh, we're just going to go to Paris. I'm like, we're just going to go to Paris? Okay. Like, in Canada, going to Paris, it's like planning the Normandy invasion.
All right, this is the worst thing about living in Toronto, mm-hmm, is that you're kind of stuck here.
Yeah.
I think it's why cottage country is so important to Torontonians, because it's somewhere you can go that's different.
Yeah.
And it's within 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But it's 4 hours to drive to Ottawa, and Ottawa's not that shit hot to begin with. It's five and a half to Montreal, depending on how you drive. It's 10 hours to New York. Like, you could go to Buffalo,
mm-hmm,
but it's 4 hours to get to Detroit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You live in Europe, and you're an hour and a half train ride. Like, I'm in Paris. I think I'll go to Brussels.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Brussels. Like, well, you know, we're doing a 3-dayer in Budapest. It's like, my Lord.
My sister lives in Germany and has for the last 20 years. And her itinerary is hilarious. She'll be like, you know what? We really love this steak paprika at this one place in Czechoslovakia. So let's go there for dinner.
Oh, my God.
What?
I mean, it's like
jump on the train, zip over.
Yeah, it's like when I was in Vienna. I was like, okay, Vienna, and then we're going to train to Frankfurt, and then we're just going to rent a car, and it's all the wine regions, and everything's close.
Which is why the 4-day trip is so exotic, because it's so bloody expensive,
mm-hmm,
that who can afford to do that?
Also, you can't do Europe 4 days. Because of just the travel and the time difference and the pressure you feel to do so much. Like, the good thing about this was, you know, not expensive airfare and a really inexpensive but nice Airbnb. I was comfortable just being on the beach. I didn't feel that pressure. I need to do 17 things. And why are we not why are we scuba diving right now?
I'm so excited by this because it's exactly the right point. And you see this with people who have cottages versus people who don't. People who don't have cottages have to make a big deal out of it.
Yeah. It's,
you got to make a meal out of it because this is my chance to go up north.
Oh, yeah.
So you have to check off everything that you do. You got to pray for good weather. But if you have your own place, you can drive up and go, you know, it was a little rainy. We came home early.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that as a, I don't want this to sound really.
It's not classic. No.
But it's the psychology of it. And we see this with travel all the time. You take so long to prepare to go. You have to do everything while you're there. Mm-hmm. God forbid the weather should be bad because you pay half your salary to go. So good for you, Matt. You're living your life.
Yes.
It's funny. It made me realize as I am so extreme in my nature.
Mm-hmm.
I either spend my entire life in my office just listening to pods and thinking of things.
Yeah.
Or I leave for a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it.
Right. There's no middle ground. It's like I'm not going down to the local restaurant to meet up with friends, but I'll tell you what, we'll do 6 weeks in California.
Again, there's not a lot of dimmer switch with you. It's a light switch. There's not a lot in the middle. So we got a lot to do, and you did a fantastic job last time. You got all your questions.
Do you have questions too?
Well, I have two different movie pitch ideas that I want to throw by you.
Let me throw in some sports.
Yeah.
And then we'll come back to the movie pitch idea. Yeah. I'm excited to hear these.
Movie pitch isn't about Rasmus Sandin. It's not.
I don't.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to throw in a couple. I typed these up on the streetcar over here. Which statement is more true, that the Dolphins are a really good team or that the Bills aren't as good as we thought? Not are either of those statements true. It's which one is more true, that the Dolphins are really good or the Bills are not as good as we thought?
It's close because the Dolphins are really good, but their defense isn't great, and if Tyreek Hill gets a bit nicked up. But then with the Buffalo one, they still, I think, have the best scoring differential, but it doesn't feel as good. Like, they nearly lost to the Lions. I'm going to go with Buffalo. And I think part of that is our expectations were so high on them, and they're having a good year, but they're second in the AFC East. And if Buffalo loses to New England, they'll probably win. But if they lose to New England, suddenly they could be like the sixth seed in the AFC.
I think you're right. And it's one of those things that's kind of weird. It's like you pick up your head and you go, the success is there, but it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me think about the Leafs, where they're on a heater, everybody's scoring, they're knocking off the teams they're supposed to. They won last night against Detroit. Mitch Marner keeps going. But there's something nagging inside where you're like, okay, I know it's good,
yeah,
but why doesn't it feel good?
Well, we know the answer. It's the same answer.
And it's the same answer for both teams because they have the ability to snatch defeat out of the jaws of victory.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it's Buffalo. And part of that, it's a tip of the cap to how high our expectations were on them going into the year.
Okay, well, I'll double up this since I brought up the Leafs with question number two, which is, given the fact that the Leafs are playing much better, and this is kind of the team we expected to see, or at least much closer to it, have they stopped being a disappointment this year?
Yeah, they have been because they're great defensively. And I think the best thing about them is all three goalies, their stats are far better than we expected. Now, Shalgren's numbers, he's a little bit under 900 save percentage. He's the third string, quarterback goalie that we just didn't expect much from. Matt Murray's got great numbers. Samsonov's got great numbers. There's not a lot of high danger chances. The level of defense being played by the forwards, by everyone, with Muzzin out, and we'll probably never see again, with Morgan Riley out, with TJ Brody been out for quite a while, and yet they're going on this hell of a heater. They're playing responsible hockey. They might not at some point. No one does for 82 games. But right now, we should be happy with what we're seeing because there is a level of maturity.
Maturity is a great word for it. And I think maturity, to your point that you were suggesting, I think, is maturity is adopting the process and learning to love the process. The mm-hmm. thing we've always hated about this team is they're kind of like that bratty kid that doesn't feel like they need to study for the test.
Right.
And when they don't do good, they just look and you go, well, I didn't even study.
Yeah, I didn't care.
Well, yeah, but you still got a C. So it gives a shit if you could have gotten an A+ if you studied. In the end, it's like, look, you want to go to law school? Hit the books.
Yeah.
And it's like they got a bit of a scare, but also the defensive depletion has forced them to play more responsibly. And also guys just warmed up a little bit. I think that's just a little bit luck. But to your point, we hate the Leafs because they never seem to do the simple things that they could do and just fucking win.
Yes.
Like, why do you have to make this so hard on yourselves? Are you trying to... This was me in high school, where I didn't want to just do it the way everybody did it. I wanted to prove I could do it my own way, because that meant I was way better than everybody else.
You were lovable and yet such a dick. Such a dick.
I found a way to fail out of enriched English.
Yeah.
That shouldn't be allowed. I got into enriched English.
Yeah, exactly. And there you are. Okay, it was your nature. It's your all or nothing nature. You got into enriched English, which shows, you know, the all-in attitude. And then you were there and you decided to be anti-authority and Bobby Bob. And then you went the other way.
Okay. Can I tell you, I'm kind of proud / really embarrassed by this, but I'll share this story with you.
Yeah.
And to all the teachers out there, I'm sure you've had this kid many times. So they were telling me I was failing English in grade 12. And it was, I said, well, this is a level 6 course. Can you just give me a level 5? Because clearly... And they said, nope, that's not how it works. And I said, well, look, there's no test that you can give me. And we both know this, I said to the teacher in her office, that I can't pass.
Yeah.
So how can you give me a failing grade? And she said, well, because you didn't do any of the work. And I said, but I didn't need to do any of the work.
Oh, God.
I could already do it. And she said, how could you be a doctor if you didn't go to med school? And I looked at her and I swear I said this, Matt.
No.
You ready for this?
Oh,
and I said,
no. All right, go.
What if you're just a born surgeon? And I walked out of her office.
Oh, my God. What if you're just a born surgeon? Those last 20 seconds are why every teacher deserves a raise. Jesus, I'm not even the most pro-union person at this point. I'm like, all right, 10% a year the next 5 years. I stand with Coopy. Coopy.
Oh, whatever that's, it is. Yeah. By the way, final grade 44.
Sounds like my chemistry mark in grade 10.
Okay, new question.
Yeah.
Why can't NFL coaches manage the clock?
It's a great question, Bob. It's a goddamn mystery. And the Jeff Saturday one, the game, the Steelers.
The Detroit Lions game.
The Detroit Lions game.
Like every week there's at least one coach that fucks up the last 2 minutes of a game.
Yeah.
But isn't that your job?
The weird thing is, shouldn't that be the easy part of the job? The hard part is devising the too high safety thing to slow down Patrick Mahomes. The easy thing should be the clock.
Honestly, these guys can do advanced algebra when it comes to inventing a play that will somehow spring the tight end free for a nanosecond so that they're open.
Yeah.
But they can't figure out the difference between 2 minutes on the clock and 3 minutes on the clock.
It's the equivalent of, why did the Death Star have that one spot where if you shot it, the whole thing blew up? Like, you're this big, huge, impressive thing. And you're right. It's the answer is, I don't know.
I honestly don't.
I don't know.
I was thinking about this on the way over here, and I thought, you love football.
Yeah.
You write for the CFL.
That's right.
You're kind of a football guy in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
A sports generalist, but a football expert.
Yes.
I always felt that way.
Yeah.
I'm not. I'm an enthusiast at best. Of the four major sports, it's the one I understand the least. So I feel like I really don't get it. But this comes up time and time again.
I know. And to the point where, I think it was Nathaniel Hackett, he's going to get fired. Oh, my God, is he
gone?
Is
it his clock management?
But he hired someone in the first couple of weeks to be in charge of the clock. That's like hiring someone to set your alarm because you don't know how to do it on your phone. Woof.
I'm going to throw another Leafs question out here.
Yeah,
just,
yeah, yeah.
Just because. Who's more likely to be a rival to the Leafs again in the Matthews era, Buffalo or Detroit? And hang on, before you answer it, I want to preface it by saying we don't have any great rival right now. And it's kind of, it feels like it could be Tampa if we were to see Tampa again in the playoffs. It could grow into that, but there's nothing really where there's this natural enmity between the Leafs and somebody else, partially because we haven't, Boston was that.
Yeah.
Boston didn't look at us as their enemy because they kept kicking our asses.
Yeah, exactly. And Tampa kind of is the same way. It's like, what, you guys? We win cups and president's trophies, and you guys come in third and lose to us in 7.
You know, but those great Sundin teams had Ottawa and, to a lesser extent, the Islanders. But between Buffalo and Detroit, they're both rising.
I would go with Detroit, partially just from, and it's funny to say this because it's not like Detroit is an easy place to be if you're in charge of local tourism, But I think Detroit would have an easier time retaining talent than Buffalo. So I'll go with the Red Wings.
It's an interesting take. I really like their management. They're getting better. They've got great young talent. You're probably right, although it's a bit of a pick 'em because Buffalo has great young talent too. But I hope the answer is Buffalo.
I hope the answer is Buffalo as well. It's so much better when it's Buffalo.
Buffalo, growing up, hating the Sabres, but knowing they're just an hour away.
Yeah.
You can zip down the QEW and see a game.
It's 70% Leaf fans. Everyone comes back with cheap Kahlua. It's a delight.
And even when they were bad and there were all those years where they would somehow manage to beat the Leafs, it didn't matter how good the squad was. When the Leafs played the Sabres found a way to stymie them.
Well, because they had an extra fuck you because they knew the crowd was chanting, go Leafs, go. And they just hated that.
I hope it's Buffalo.
Yeah.
All right. So movie pitch me. And then I got some more questions when we're done.
Okay. So I was thinking about this, that we all like Billy Bean. It was always looking for you're always looking for the market inefficiencies. Mm-hmm. So I was watching Andor. It's awesome. It's great. Full five stars, all that. But it's also the classic about the poor person, the worker, the downtrodden. And that's so many stories. Like Titanic is basically, the story of Titanic is poor people good, rich people bad. Even though the true story is Billy Zane's the hero. Anyway, I want to start making films for like really right-wing people. So my first movie pitch, and I don't know how to do this, but this it's the story of the heroic rich people who create jobs fighting evil unions, and somehow the end of the movie is going to heroically be people with cigars and champagne that they were able to limit the medical benefits given unto their workers. I'm trying to find a way to make this work where I do the opposite, where it's rich people are all the good ones and the poor people should just shut up.
You don't feel that Fox News covers that off?
But it's not movies. And that's fine. That's Fox News. I want the film. I want it in the theater. I don't know how I'm going to cast for this. You know, going to be James Woods and James Woods' best friends.
I would argue.
Yeah.
They kind of exist. Mm. The Steve Jobs movie. Now, we have a tendency to go, oh, he was a creative genius, this, that, and the other thing. But he was a leader of industry.
Yeah, but he was also kind of like lonely and was through a lot of it. He was just seen as a really shitty dad.
So another, okay, so first of all, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. I feel like you're cornering the market on this.
That's all I'm trying to do is corner the market on something that doesn't exist. Basically, heroic CEO fights life and death battle and heroically overcomes the minimum, keeps the minimum wage minimum.
Okay, so if I understand the arc of your film, it's guy who has it all doesn't lose it.
Yes, exactly. Born on third and trots home. That's what I'm trying to create.
So born on third.
Yeah.
And then there's three hit by pitches.
Yes. And then he gets home.
And he comes trotting in.
Yes. And he instead of a lightsaber, it's a silver spoon. And he pulls it out of his mouth and he El Kabongs the union leader. So it's my first movie pitch. The second one is my more round one. My second one, I got a real arc to it. But that's my first one.
You know, have you ever seen the movie Hollywoodism?
No.
It's a Simca Jakubowicz, and it's about how the Jewish diaspora created Hollywood. But more importantly, it was the idea, or not just Hollywood, but the idea of America, America is.
Right.
And it was kind of not told in terms of the reality of it, but the fantasy that people wished it would be. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of became what people thought it was.
Oh, so it's a brand. They created America, the brand.
Kind of. I mean, that's his central argument. It's pretty compelling. Hmm. And the reason, like, it's funny because what it actually is, the real story is that not that the rich guy stays rich, mm-hmm. but that the poor guy can become rich.
Yeah.
That's the real story. So in a way, like, most Hollywood movies are really about you can be rich too.
It's aspirational. Yeah.
So, you know, the movies that are really about like the fighting the man, mm-hmm. they tend to be pretty niche, like really fighting the man. Mm-hmm. What you really get in Hollywood films is you're an average person, but if you just follow the rules, you can be big too.
Well, let's see, Star Wars, you know, it was a bunch of rebels and but I guess they were aspirational.
Well, you know what's funny about Star Wars is, and Andor really picks up on this so brilliantly.
Yeah.
It's a very subversive film. They're basically a group of terrorists.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what they are. they're a group of terrorists, like taking down the government, like blowing things up.
The genius of Andor is you can actually see the Empire as an empire.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
In the Star Wars movies, and this is how we get around it, is because it's space opera.
Yeah.
It's a fantasy. There's magic. There's
robots, lasers.
All of it. It doesn't feel real. The genius of Andor, and God, I love it, is on both sides, you can see the compromises they have to make.
Mm-hmm.
And the evils that they do and the goods they think they're doing.
Yeah, it's really good.
You know, the Stellan Skarsgård character who lets the rebels die because he doesn't want to tip off that he's got a man inside. And him and Saw Gerrera, which is obviously built on Che Guevara, I should say. The genius of it is exactly what you're talking about, is the told from the rich guy point of view.
Yeah, yeah. The heroic rich guy.
I don't know if they come across as heroic in Andor.
But I know, but that's why mine's going to be heroic.
What about Richie Rich, starring Macaulay Culkin?
Yeah, the movie didn't do very well. That was an early 90s movie. Bad, didn't do well at the box office or at Rotten Tomatoes. By the way, the interesting thing about the Andor one is when they said, okay, we're going to let those rebels die because we need to make sure the Empire doesn't know that, you know, we're onto them. Well, in the movie Imitation Games, they talk about that. When the British solved Enigma, when they solved the Germans' codes, they were like, okay, we know those ships are going to get torpedoed. We got to let them get torpedoed because we can't let the Germans know we figured out their code. So they were doing this human calculus about how best to get the advantage and the cost of the lives of humans.
Let's cast your movie.
Yeah, okay.
Let's do this.
Yeah.
All right. I got some coffee in me.
Yeah.
I got a phone.
Yeah.
Let's do it. I got a phone, a coffee, and some reading glasses.
Yes.
Okay, so who plays the big boss?
Well, the first thing is its casting's going to be hard because they're going to read the script. And I'm like, no, this is an irony. This is a triumph.
No, you got to get a Mel Gibson.
Mm. Okay. Ooh, can we lure Kevin Spacey back from Italy?
I think lure and Kevin Spacey should not be used in the same sense.
You know what? Should we hire? You're right. The word lure, problematic. Excellent point by you, Bob.
I think you need somebody who's got size.
Yeah.
Because we don't want a skinny mega-capitalist.
No.
This has got to be...
Like... Marlon Brando in his final days.
Like Boss Hogg from the Dukes of Hazzard.
Yes.
You know, you're always sweating, you're patting your forehead with your rich handkerchief.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Brian Cox does a really good job of that.
Yes. And maybe we could get him because we write a really good script and he's doing it for the acting.
And he thinks it's a comedy.
Yeah, exactly. We just came from Succession.
Like Succession, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, this is biting satire. And you're like, sure it
Yes, it is.
Brian.
Wink. You know, as you know. Wait, why is that Alex Jones t-shirt on? Nah, never you mind. Just go back to reading the script.
I don't know why his wife should be Catherine Zeta-Jones. I just feel like it should.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, no. The wife is going to be so inappropriately too young.
Like
for
Melania
him.
Trump?
Yeah, exactly.
No, you think inappropriately young. See, what I think is like over 50, but trying to look young.
Mm.
Catherine Zeta-Jones is in the new Wednesday show, the Tim Burton Netflix thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She's not in it much. I haven't seen her much. Have you seen it?
Amy watched it, so I got a little periphery of it.
I'm watching it with my daughter because she's taking notes on how to be Wednesday Addams.
Of course.
Yeah. Okay, so I like Catherine Zeta-Jones, but who would be really young? Who could be, again, could it be a reality star?
Or what about Melania?
Oh, does she act? Sure.
Sure she does. She acted like she was a married, you know? She acted like a wife. Melania.
Oh, man, this stunt casting is getting better and better. Okay, well, we don't really have to worry about who's going to play the union boss. There's 700 of them.
Yeah, that's...
Mark Ruffalo, though.
Holy shit, I was going to say Mark Ruffalo as well. He's got just that level of just gasbaggery, a little sometimes over the... We get it. We get it on your social media. We do. And also an incredible actor and seems like a really good fella. Yes, Mark Ruffalo for sure.
Now, we need somebody on the inside who ultimately rigs the game for our uber capitalists. So maybe who could be the president?
Ooh, God. James Woods. I mean, again, Bob, this is a small pool.
President Woods.
I'm not going to lie to you. This is the flaw of my movie plans. The second one, it will be easier to do. But
Woods was in Oliver Stone's Salvador.
Yeah.
Which is like the most leftist movie in history.
Man's got range. You know, it shows that the power of reinvention is alive and well in James Woods.
Well, I think right now... The funny thing is, your film will make about $11 at the box office and about $27 billion in rentals.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we're getting the streamers, Bob. We are getting the streamers. Back to sports?
Yeah.
By the way, needs to be said, you're really good at typing, like on your phone. And this is, I'll go old man for a second. Do you know what I do when I have to send a long text? I write it on Microsoft Word.
And then you cut
and paste? I cut and paste it, and I email it to myself via my Hotmail account. Then I cut and paste it, and I put in a text. Because I hate typing. It infuriates me.
If you want to see fast typing, kids under 18 on their phones.
It's incredible.
It is incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I've got one episode left on The Good Place. I'm the finale is sitting there ready to go.
Oh, God. But you can see the...
You can see where it's going.
You can see what's
going to
happen.
We can speak openly about this because it's clearly going to happen. But they've set it up where you can voluntarily cast yourself into oblivion.
Yes.
To disrupt and end the ennui of a life that has no change.
Yes. Yeah. Could see how that last episode...
Fucked you right up.
Oh, my God. Just... openly bawling, just openly like, nope, don't care. World can see it.
I can see right now. I see now. What's the final speech? Is it Chidi and Eleanor, or don't tell me? I'm trying to guess. I'm the writer, I feel like the final speech should be Michael and Eleanor because they're really the two leads.
So you'll find out.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on. But yes, watching kids type is like watching Dustin Hoffman play blackjack oh my God! How can the Tom Cruise?
Rain Man.
Got him in the end.
Okay, are the Raptors a top six team?
Yeah, they are. Like to me, yes, they have top six talent. They have top six coach. They've got top six infrastructure. The thing I'm most fascinated about is can you have Siakam, Barnes, and OG on the court where they can simultaneously have individual glory within team winning?
Do you feel last year the dialogue was whatever Scotty needs?
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like that's changed?
A little bit.
Why is that?
Injuries, teams focus a little bit more on him. His offense hasn't taken any sort of jump. And we knew going into this year that it probably wasn't going to be linear, you know, but just offensively, he doesn't take enough shots. He doesn't seem yet ready to embrace that role more. And maybe it's hard for him to with, you know, the other forwards that are doing well. But yeah, it doesn't feel like it. You're right. Yeah, it doesn't feel like that.
Why is Scotty only good this year? He's certainly not bad.
Yeah.
He plays solid defense. Mm-hmm. He fills up the stat sheet, but doesn't overwhelm in any particular category. His assists are nice. I haven't looked it up this year, but it feels like he's logging a lot of assists.
Yes, yeah.
But his rebounds are down, and clearly his scoring is quite down.
Yeah.
So why?
I just think youth, and he doesn't yet have the get out of the way, give me the ball, let me do this.
Is that it? Do you think it's psychological more than it is? I've watched a lot where he certainly is playmaking and thinking team concept. If you're Nick Nurse, do you love that?
The hard part there...
He has said, take it to the rack more.
Yes, and shoot more. He wants him to shoot more. But if Siakam is doing this well, and... I don't know. It's an absolute mystery. Because they have three really, really talented forwards. And OG Anunoby, you know, we talk about what the Leafs done in the month of November. OG Anunoby has been incredible in this past month. And it's I said he is the quietest player of consequence in the NBA. You know, I shouldn't say in the NBA because we get very myopic and we just focus on our team. But he's one of the most quietest players of consequence.
I know. How long can he be satisfied being quietly effective?
It's his
career.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's clear that Pascal goes out, he steps up. I don't think it's him and Scotty because Scotty is more of a natural facilitator and is clearly deferential to the older guys. But Pascal and OG have to find a way to coexist. Now, of course, they can.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're talking about personalities.
Yeah.
You know, OG feels like a guy who could be an all-star if he's featured more.
Yeah. My question is...
And an unsung hero if he's not. Sorry to interrupt, but to your point, do you want a guy who's satisfied being quiet?
Could Scotty Barnes be Fred VanVleet? I'm trying to go just in a different direction here because there's only one ball and you always worry about roster duplication.
Mm-hmm.
Could Scotty Barnes basically be the point guard? If you have Siakam and OG and Barnes on the court at the same time. I'm just throwing shit out on the wall here because I think all three of them have the ability to be 20-point scorers and not in an inefficient way. I'm a 20-point scorer like Sharif Abdul-Rahim on a horrible Grizzlies team.
So this was my prediction last year, and I think it speaks to what you're asking. I think that Gary Trent Jr. needs to be traded.
Yeah.
Because then Scotty can be more responsible for distributing the ball, and Fred can go off ball, which is where he's actually better. Mm-hmm. You want Fred to essentially be the 5'11" two guard, which is not a comfortable place for him to be. He can bring the ball up, but you almost want the ball running through Scotty more than Fred, because then you can move Fred around,
yeah,
and get him the kinds of shots he likes. Mm-hmm. He's not great at setting up an offense, Fred. He's not great at it. He's not Chris Paul, and I'm not saying that Chris Paul's a Hall of Famer, but it's not his skill set.
I think his main issue is still his ability to finish around the rim. Just because,
well, he's 5'11".
Yeah, and that's not all. It's because of his height.
No, but you want him spot up shooting. You want him coming off of screens, getting the ball and shooting. And I almost feel like if Scotty's running the offense, it frees up Fred to be more Fred. Think about where Fred really succeeded. And of course, he's clutch. He's a good player. So this is not a knock on him. It's like, how do you use someone so that what they do great is what they do the most?
Yes.
Well, that's the problem with OG.
Yeah.
What he does great, he doesn't do the most.
Mm-hmm. But can he do what he does great the most when everyone is healthy together? Because they're a weird team. Like, we went into there celebrating. They're a weird team. They're all 6'7 with a 7-foot wingspan. Well, weird is wonderful and nice, and it's admirable. But how do you harness weird into winning? Because here's the thing about winning championships. Most of the time, they're done in a very traditional, conventional way. About you got, you know, your guard that does all these wonderful things. You got a couple bigs. Doesn't have to necessarily be a traditional center. Well, that's not who the Raptors are. Not a conventional team trying to win a championship. And winning a championship usually requires a certain level of convention.
Gary Trent Jr. needs to hit from three to open up the floor, which I think will create opportunities for OG. But everybody knows the Raptors are not a great three-point shooting team.
Nope.
And this creates spacing issues. They can kind of get around it by having guys being able to... They're so movement-oriented. But in the end, there's nothing that beats... You've got to have somebody out on the perimeter to guard your three-point shooter. That just opened up a lane.
Question is, who will they eventually trade?
I think it's Gary.
No. That's the easy one.
Oh, who, of the four?
Of the three. Ananobi, Siakam, or Scotty Barnes?
I think they trade Fred.
But they don't have another guard. Who's their guard?
A guard is findable.
True. No, fair point. A guard is more findable. But in terms of like really moving the needle, you're not going to get a ton for Fred. You could get a ton for any of those three bigs. You could, you know, as you just said, you can always find a guard. So you're not going to get as much for Fred or for Gary Trent. You will get a lot for Siakam, OG, or Scotty Barnes.
I don't remember, but what did Minnesota get for Wiggins? They got D'Angelo Russell and a pick?
Yeah. I'd have to go back. Of course, the thing is, no one knows of the trade market anymore because Rudy Gobert fucked it up. You know, when Minnesota gave all those picks for Rudy Gobert, it totally... If Rudy Gobert never gets traded to Minnesota, Durant might have been traded. Like, it's funny, the unintended consequence of Rudy Gobert going from Utah to Minnesota was the price was so high, then the Brooklyn Nets could ask for the world. If Rudy Gobert's in Utah, Kevin Durant might not be in Brooklyn. Ooh, I kind of like that one.
Are you jotting this one down?
I'm not.
Are you going to write it into your Word doc and then cut and paste it into your phone?
I'm not on air today or tomorrow because of the World Cup. So by Thursday, I'll move on to something
else. Okay, well, this is a good one to jump over to my World Cup question, which is, who would you rather see win today?
Yeah.
USA or Iran? Who would you rather see win?
The U.S.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm always going to be pro U.S. I'm always going to be pro our neighbor to the south because every country has its flaws. But I'm still going to root for the country that gave me Sonoma Chardonnay and Tom Hanks.
That said, though, the Iranian team with its various protests against its own government.
Yep.
And the fact that there are Iranian women, like I was reading this on The Athletic today, in the stands, you know, and they're worried that there's technology being used to spot them so that when they come back, they'll be in trouble because they acted like people.
Okay, so the further run they go on, the more it keeps that story in the spotlight.
And also, maybe the more it inspires people to continue to push those limits.
Yeah.
This is one of the most repressive regimes in the world. We mm-hmm. have a huge problem. Like, if you're voting for the USA, really, don't you want Iran to be a little more democratic?
No, that's a good point. All right. I flip it around. Apologies to David Ramey Chardonnay from the Hyde Vineyards and Tom Hanks. You were kind of weird in Elvis. So then I'll just switch over and go to Iran.
You know, that said, though, I was happy that the USA tied England.
Mm.
Like, I think I'm past the point where I want them to lose all the games.
Yeah. I'm not anti-American. I'm not sitting here with a Uncle Sam hat on. I'm just not anti the United States.
What is the next movie you'll see in theater? We're coming up to Christmas time. This is like
Fablemans. I will go see the Fablemans, which is getting great reviews mm-hmm. and by audience and the critics.
Can I throw a couple out at you?
Yeah.
You seen Wakanda Forever yet?
I haven't. I can't wait.
Yeah, see, the thing is, that's a theater movie, right?
Yeah.
Like,
you
can watch the Fablemans at home and not go...
But I see everything in the theater. If it's in the movie theater, I will see it in the movie. Again, it's no children, more flexibility, easier to do.
No, I get it. What about Glass Onion?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There's some good ones out there.
Yeah, there are some good ones out there.
What I'd like to do, and this is what I propose to the, if you're listening.
By the way, The Menu. Go see The Menu's great.
That looks so good, too.
It's great.
Yeah, I've got like a list of about four or five that I'd like to see in the theater, and The Menu's one of them.
Yeah.
I think you should be able to get a day pass for movies.
Mm. And then you can just, for one day, you can see as many as you want.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Kind of like you get a day pass for the TTC.
Yeah.
And you can just have unlimited rides. Mm. I think, like, I would use, like, it's obviously not how they're going to make most of their money, but honestly, I would set aside a day for movies where mm-hmm. I see three movies and I can go and come back and go and come back. They make all of their money from the concessions anyway.
Yeah.
So you build into the price of it that you pay for popcorn and, like, it's a guarantee, like, $50.
Yeah.
$50 gets you unlimited movies, a popcorn, and a drink.
Done. I don't even need the drink because we'll be bringing in our own wine, but I'll still buy the popcorn.
Sure, illegal technically, but you've always been a bit of a rule breaker.
That's right, exactly. By the way, the one thing I'm embarrassed about in The Menu, so one of the servers, this is not a spoiler alert, says the wine comes from a single row of grapes, and it's only Premier Crew. Get the fuck out of here. If you were sourcing from such a small amount of grapes, that's Grand Crew. There's no way that's Premier Crew. I was embarrassed for the writers. Anyway, continue.
I'm embarrassed for them, too.
Yeah.
I'm embarrassed with you.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah?
What if I was born a surgeon?
What if I was born a drunk?
Yeah, exactly.
So I was about to ask you a question. I just lost it.
The Menu, movies, going to the theater, Fablemans.
Oh, yes. Right. I was going to ask you about Spielberg because mm-hmm. on The Ringer, they just did a podcast ranking his 35 films, which
Holy
is such a
shit. That's
like an epic, stupid task.
Oh,
it's
my
impossible.
God. How do you do like Schindler's List versus Jaws versus Jurassic Park? I mean, how the hell do you...
You can only rescue one movie from all the original prints are burning.
Well, we know it's Jaws.
Do we know it's Jaws?
Yeah, it's Jaws.
Do we? Raiders?
Well, fuck. God damn it. That's hard.
Jurassic Park?
Jurassic Park's going to go. I love Jurassic Park. I'll know. It's maybe the greatest...
It's one of the greatest action movies of all time.
It is.
Considering the technology that was involved.
Yes.
It's like Avatar with a better story.
Yes. 100%. And... It was one of the greatest movie-going experiences of my life was seeing Jurassic Park.
I still remember it.
Like, so do I.
I remember seeing all of those films. Probably the one that affected me the most was Jaws, though, because it made me scared to swim for the next 30 years.
Yeah.
I think you got to save Jaws. I think the answer is Jaws. Mm-hmm. But what's so amazing is, like, you know, he's got some shitty movies and then a whole bunch of whatevers.
Yeah.
And, but then when you get to the top 10... It's the fucking 27 Yankees.
Yeah.
Like, just the cream of the crop is just... You know, between Raiders and Jaws, he's made two of my favorite, like, five favorite movies of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what's amazing is how much the other film, like, critics were like, oh, Spielberg, he's so catering to the people.
Yeah.
You know who loves Spielberg? Other directors.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Everyone loves Spielberg except for, you know, the New York Times and Paulina Kael. Yes, a Paulina Kael reference in the pod. Look it up.
It's Pauline Kael, but...
Damn it. But still, no, I'm good, still proud. Still
no,
proud.
You should be proud. Thank you. You should Thank be proud. You know the difference between little crew and grand crew?
That's right. Premier crew.
Whatever.
It's it goes. It's the Bourgogne level, then Village, then sure Premier, and then grand crew.
Okay, my phone's about to run out of juice, so I better get through these questions pretty quick.
Yeah. Oh, you by the way, as you're looking for it,
yeah, go do it, Jeff.
Hey, jeffpollock.com. What's Jeff Pollock? Jeffpollock.com, you ask? Glad you did. Not only is it a website, it is your savior for all your legal help and needs. You're insecure about the law? You should be. It's out there to screw you, the little guy. That's why you need a lawyer. You need legal help. We have a lawyer. He's our sponsor. He should be your lawyer as well. Jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G and two Fs. The second F stands for don't fuck around with him. Yeah, jeffpollock.com.
This is a good segue into one of my big questions today.
Ooh.
Why don't we know how to talk about cops in our culture?
Mm.
It seems people either have them as history's greatest villains,
yes,
or that they can do no wrong and need to be protected at all costs.
We need more of a dimmer switch with them.
So I'm watching the Emergency Acts thing go down.
Yeah.
And I actually thought Trudeau did a pretty good job. I didn't find his argument ultimately compelling because I just think governments reaching into our civil rights, it better be good.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't like it when Ford did it with CUPE. I don't like it that Trudeau did it in with the convoys, you know. But I did think he did a good job of explaining the thinking that went into it.
Okay. Yeah.
And what became really clear was that law enforcement was totally fugazi.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it was the Ottawa local cops or the RCMP, that you're the government and you're kind of hoping that these people who are paid law enforcement people will come in and do something right.
Yeah.
And that did not happen week after week. And just made things worse in a lot of cases or whatever. But what really occurred to me, and this was interesting to me, was we have no problem criticizing Trudeau or government or anybody's involvement. Like, they're fucking pinata number one.
Yeah.
But how do you talk about cops? Well, people will either say they did this incredibly horrible job and they deserve to rot in hell, or what do you expect them to do? And I would say, well, their jobs.
Yes.
You know, but it made me think, why can't we talk about cops?
Because it gets to all the issues of classism, racism, abuse of power. And then I think the fear is if you say, listen, I think the cops are doing a good job, someone in the world will then go, oh, so you're being pro-cop here, you're being a racist. And then the other side, oh, so you hate cops, you want to defund the police? Well, guess what's going to happen? Then it's going to be the cities are going to lead to more murders, and then it's going to be more crime, and then you're going to get back to money, wealth gap, and race, and then it just gets messy, and then everyone gets afraid. And in a world where we say we need to have an honest dialogue, people don't want to have an honest dialogue because they're afraid.
The idea of defund the cops was a terrible idea. But specifically because of the way the word sounds.
Yes, it should have been demilitarize.
That's a beautiful way to put it.
That's the
and who could disagree with that?
Yes, if you look like you are in the middle of a war, if you look like you are about to hunt Osama bin Laden, then you probably have a little too much gear for downtown Toronto or downtown Detroit.
I think you're right about everything you said, but I think there's another layer behind it.
Oh, there's tons of other layers.
But there's one that's really interesting to me, and that's if we were to say, okay, well, they are public servants the way that teachers are or nurses are. You know, we pay them with our tax money, mm-hmm. so they work for us. So we should audit their funding seriously.
Yeah.
And figure out in what ways we can save money, figure out in what ways we can deploy them more effectively. People who are pro-cop will say, you want a what?
Yeah.
And that's where I find we actually can't have this conversation. It's like teachers have a very hard job. You know, my mom was in the emergency room for a couple nights, and those nurses,
they're the best.
Like, they're angels.
Yes. Every nurse is a goddamn angel.
You know, and in that situation, you can't tell me they're not at risk. Like, you have people who are whacked on PCP rolling in. Like, they're not armed. They're not trained.
Yes.
There was, like, a screaming person next to my mom for hours. Like, it's a hard, hard, hard job.
Mm-hmm.
But we as a culture feel very comfortable saying, well, let's put their finances under the microscope. But with cops, like, the last round of collective bargaining for cops, basically everything just got green lit. Like, it was just rubber stamp. Yep. And critics of it were like, wait a minute, did they just get everything they asked for? Could you imagine another public sector negotiation where we said we should give them everything they ask for? It's a hard job.
Absolutely not. And I guess the one pushback is they do have the most dangerous job.
They don't. And this is...
Well, like, in terms of their life, I'm saying they're...
But it's not true.
Really?
Construction workers have a much higher fatality rate on the job than cops do. Crab fishermen have a much higher rate of fatality. People in the forestry industry or mining. I'm not saying cop isn't a dangerous job.
Yeah.
But it's not the most dangerous.
Okay, no, fair enough. But I'd say in terms of public service jobs... I would say that cops have, and again, if I'm wrong on stats, I'm here for all of that. But I would say, and I'm saying that's why it can be hard to talk about it, because their jobs are more dangerous than a teacher.
See, it's funny because while that is true, culturally, we don't know how to put them in their proper bracket in terms of the danger they face, which is not obviously none. Mm-hmm. You put yourself in the line of fire, and that is certainly true. But they are armed. They are trained.
Yep.
And people don't die on the job or get hurt on the job nearly as much as they do in construction. Mm-hmm. But you would not say when the construction union goes out there and say, well, we have to protect these people. I mean, they build our buildings. Like, we need places to live. There's people who are constantly getting seriously hurt on the job. There's corners being cut by bad actors constantly that put workers at risk. You know, that world is a mess. And we kind of just say, okay. But with cops, and I'm not saying this is necessarily like, I don't want to come across as the left guy, because I actually think cops perform a really important function. And I've seen cops be really good. I had a cop put a nightstick to my throat and jam me against the back of a car. Let me tell you this story.
Yeah.
So we're rolling down the street. It's me, Merrick, a couple other guys. I'm in the back seat. We're listening to Zeppelin and we're rocking out. And we roll past Maple Leaf Gardens and we pull up to a light and there's a big crowd going on. I think there's a show inside. And we're bopping and I'm having a great time, totally sober. Roll down the window and there's a cop there. And I go, hey, cop, you love Zeppelin? Yeah. He comes walking over and he says, leans into the car with his nightstick out, grabs me by the head, slams it against the back of the seat, presses the nightstick against my throat so I can barely breathe and I'm doing this. And he says, would you fucking say smartass? I said, you say sorry. You say sorry right now. And there's a car full of people. He's ramming the nightstick against my throat. And I'm bark out sorry. And he goes, next time you learn to shut your fucking mouth. And he walks away.
Yeah.
Now, here's what was interesting about that.
He was a Stones fan?
Yeah, clearly. No, what was interesting about that to me was I saw that as something that was probably never going to happen again.
Yeah.
But there's communities out there who don't.
That's Wednesday.
That, you know. So when I tell that story, people are like, oh, that's horrible. And this is why I have empathy for people, because I thought, God, imagine if you lived thinking that could happen at any time.
Yeah.
We can't have a realistic conversation about that.
Yeah.
But this is what gets me back to the emergency acts thing. People are either like, they all need to be fired and defunded, or we can't touch it because it's such a hard job.
You know what I think part of this comes down to, and this is only part, there's no one explanation, is we're very much more about feelings and emotion. I like that guy. I'm voting for her because I hate her. Versus if we could find...
Teams.
Teams, tribalism, all that shit. If we could get rid of emotion and feelings and strictly go on policy, just... I think if all we're doing is reading policy instead of listening to empty calorie rhetoric, I think then it'd be easier to have a conversation because emotions would be tamped down a little bit and maybe there'd be a little bit more logic and the ability to compromise when you're just looking at straight facts and you're not hearing fiery, blustery speech.
Do you remember when we were kids and they would have political debates and they'd get up there and talk about what they intended to do and then the other candidates would disagree with them?
Yeah.
When was the last time you saw that?
Fuck if I know.
Right?
Yeah.
It becomes, there's no point in even watching anymore because they just pick on some meaningless point that has nothing to do with what they would do. Mm-hmm. It's all become this crazy, to your point, it's become so emotional. And we were talking the other day about race and how we just don't know how to talk about it.
Yeah.
Law and order, we just don't know how to talk about it.
If you had just policy, so that for me is a big one. If it was just policy. And you just broke down the numbers and you looked at, okay, well, it seems that, you know, African-Americans are treated, you know, more violently by the police on percentage levels. And then you just look at everything. And then, but then you do a, you know, a deeper dive into all of it. None of it's going to solve it. I'm just thinking, getting back to the original question, but you can't talk about police. You can't, or because everyone's yelling. Is there a way just to lower the yelling? That's all.
I was thinking the other day, Sam Harris, who's someone, this is going to set up one of my last questions. Sam Harris, who does the Making Sense podcast, and I listen to it a lot. He just got off Twitter, and what he was saying was really interesting. It's not that he hated having people treat him like a pinata. Mm-hmm. It's that it encouraged him to see people as irrational. because that's where they were behaving irrational. And he was getting sucked into the idea that this is what people are really like.
Yeah.
And they're not.
No.
This is just where they behave badly.
Yes.
You know, it's like if you went to 2 a.m. at a bar and you said, oh, that's what people are like.
Yeah. No. It's Twitter is almost like what happens when you have a substitute teacher. You know, it's like,
oh my God, that's a great analogy.
Yeah, it's like, wait a minute, you kids are usually fairly well behaved. Now there's a substitute teacher and you're all acting like assholes.
That is such a great analogy. Yeah, I mean, I mostly got off it because it was weird that Sam Harris said that, because I suddenly realized, I was texting my friend the other day, was really upset about some idiots who were ripping him over. He made a comment about Ukraine. They were like, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, this isn't real people.
No.
Like 80% of the world doesn't see it this way. They might even disagree with you, but they would never put with you, but they'd never put it this way.
Yeah.
This is like a tiny sliver of very vocal assholes.
Yeah. It's you know, it's the nudist colony. It's a small amount of people that have no decorum and they should put on a pair of pants.
Fuck, you've got some really great analogies going on.
Do you want to hear my other movie pitch?
You have another movie pitch?
Yes, I told you. I have two movie pitches.
Oh, Jesus, why didn't you do both? I mean, we're in the room. Okay, well, we have to because we're probably running out of time.
We have got about 8 minutes left. So okay. This one as well, again, it's going to be funded by Fox or Ben Shapiro or someone. And here's what it is. It's the future. Sometime in the future. Aliens have enslaved us because we've all become a bunch of cuck beta males. I had to look up what those terms meant. Because we've all gotten so woke in feelings and all of that, that the aliens are able to stride in and take over all of us. Because we're all a bunch of weaklings. This is going to play big with certain parts of the world. So the way to solve the problem is they invent a time machine. And they go and they find the hero. The hero is junior VP ad exec from 1985. Cut to a shot of a guy on a plane. He's got a cigarette. He's got a glass of scotch. He's patting the woman on the tush going, can I have another drink? And then he's taken from 1985 into current day. And there he is using terms that we don't use anymore. He's like, why are you being so sensitive? And this man becomes the hero to help rescue Earth against the alien overlords to show, hey, men, time to toughen up a little bit. Put the broads in their place.
So this may shock you.
Uh-huh.
But I think that's a good idea.
What's that?
I think that's a good idea.
Hooray!
And the reason I think it's a good idea is because it was the biggest show on Amazon last year.
Oh, no.
And it was basically called Reacher. The only thing that was missing was the time machine.
Hmm.
In the last little while, like all the 80s movies are basically what you just described. That's Demolition Man.
Yeah, I'm doing Demolition Man.
With Sylvester Stallone and Wesley Snipes.
If there is some Demolition Man in this.
Right?
We'll bring back Leary, Dennis Leary.
But Reacher, yeah. Did you see it?
No. I know what it is.
Yeah, it's good. But yeah. It's like the big Arnold Schwarzenegger looking guy who's in current day and he acts like an 80s hero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but in my version, like, he's actually trying to help.
Did you kill that guy? Yeah, I did, because he bugged me.
Yeah.
Boom.
Boom. There we go. That's how it gets done right now. By the way, there's nothing wrong with using the word broads. Here's 17 other culturally inappropriate comments I'm going to make.
By the way, Matt, it also happened in real life, and his name's Donald Trump.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, God. See, the problem with this movie is it's going to eventually be satire, and then the funding, they're going to get angry at me. Eventually.
How could it not be satire?
I know. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. This is satire. I'll get Judd Apatow. I was just trying to market inefficiency. And the same thing that like Kirk Cameron does when he does religious movies and he makes them for $50,000 and then he gets like 12 million.
Left Behind.
Yeah. Like
that's
left
what
behind.
It's called. Left
yeah,
Behind.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I want to do one of those.
There's a guy named Timothy LaHaye, I believe his name is. And he wrote this series. He was a pastor in middle America and it was the Left Behind series. And I believe it sold something like, the series has 80 million copies in total.
Mazel tov.
It's almost like Metallica in the sense that they were one of the biggest bands in the world with no airplay.
No.
Not one. And the whole, like if I talk to you about Roblox, I mean, they're kind of mainstream now, but you probably don't know what that is.
What's that?
They went public, but Roblox is a platform where the kids play.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like Fortnite in the sense that it's multiplayer, it's real time, all that stuff. But every kid in the world was on this thing. And nobody who doesn't have kids could know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
Nobody would know.
Yeah.
If you have kids, you would know because that's all your kids are doing.
Right.
But to you, again, it's like Metallica. For metal fans, they're the biggest band in the world. Mm-hmm. They're filling out arenas everywhere.
Yep.
To you, if you're not a metal fan, who?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So,
all right. So, best podcast of 2022.
Let's see.
Not individual episode, but like.
I mean, for me, it still is a spinning wheel of Corolla, Lebatard, This American Life, and Bill Simmons. Those are sort of the four. Every now and then, I mean, yeah, it's those four. That's all I have time for.
I like Pivot. Mm-hmm. It is something on business and also headed by my two favorite people in the media right now, Kara Swisher and Scott Galloway. Scott Galloway's Prof G pod is really good. Mm-hmm. Kara Swisher's new pod on is really good. Ezra Klein, mm-hmm. I think, does a great job.
Yep.
Always very compelling. Sam Harris, I think, is very interesting. He can be a little bit self-righteous sometimes, but...
Yeah, but who can't?
He's a born surgeon.
Yeah.
Are we anybody's favorite pod?
I don't know. We don't need to be. I don't mind being someone's Elizabeth Manley. They're silver medal. You know, I'm good with that.
You and I are so different.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. You want to conquer everyone. You know, I'm here for a good time.
You know, when we were young and mm-hmm. just coming up.
Yeah.
And we had this show that was a pretty hot show. Mm-hmm. You were like, oh, that's great. People like the show.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right.
Yeah.
Let's roll up our sleeves and get to work.
Whenever there was, when we were working radio together, whenever we had the ratings conversation, you know, the boss going, okay, your ratings are here and this, what's going on. I was just thinking of what are we going to have for lunch? Mm-hmm. I was still going to work just as hard. You know, if the ratings are great or the ratings are bad. But I'm like, when was the last time I had a Cuban sandwich? You know, like that would be the things that would be going on through my head.
And I'm thinking, how do we become Mark Cuban?
Yeah. Ah, goodbye, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.